Half an hour later, he pulled up opposite Eros in the gilded cage and saw Talbot staring along Piccadilly. A policeman moved towards the driver who would dare to stop where traffic should go in perpetual motion. Roger waved him away and walked swiftly along. "Hello, Talbot." Talbot started violently.
"Lord, you scared me."
He looked round nervously.
"I'm full of the heebie-jeebies. Shadows follow me all over the place. Where's your outsize Romeo?"
They hurried to the car. Roger saw a yard man, doubtless the one who was on Talbot's tail. The man recognized him and gave an almost imperceptible signal. No one else was following.
"Why do you want to see me?" asked Roger, driving off.
Talbot struck a theatrical gesture. He was trying very hard to be flippant.
"Hi, super sleuth with his nose to the trail. I have a mysterious missive. I telephoned you because I wanted to talk to you about it. And from now on, I will not deal with Coppernob, the Copper's Don Juan. Unless there's any special reason, I shall not see your Turnbull again. I hate the sight and sound of him. I don't even believe he would be good for Regina. Is it part of a policeman's job to trifle with the affections of a woman in a case?"
Roger said, "Talbot, I have a lot to do.
I am about to disgorge the secret. But I lured you out in order to make one or two simple statements of fact that I can't make at Scotland Yard or within the hearing of the newspaper hounds. I think Turnbull's a clot and a swine.
Is he serious, Regina?"
"I am not Turnbull's keeper."
"You're his senior at the Yard. You ought to keep him on a leash," Talbot flashed.
"If he's fallen for Gina in a big way, well, that's my cue to set out for Australia or far, far away. I might even wish them good luck from a distance. But if he's fooling around with her just to try to get the answer to this murderous business, then I..." Talbot broke off and gripped his own coat lapels so tightly that the knuckles showed white.
"Come across, West? Is Turnbull leading Gina up the garden as part of his copper's job?"
Roger said quietly, "Turnbull's had no instructions to work that way.
It certainly wouldn't have official sanction, and as far as I'm concerned, Turnbull's running big risks in seeing so much of Miss Hyatt."
"Well, that's a gust of refreshing frankness," Talbot said, as if surprised.
"Thanks.
What kind of risks?"
"He could be prejudicing an important witness," Roger said. "He's laying himself wide open to attack from the press.
If you want my private opinion, he's making a ruddy fool of himself because he can't help it. If you ever say that to him or to anyone else..."
"Oh, Hawkeye, grant me some honour."
"Thanks anyway."
Talbot took a letter from his pocket.
"Here's the real reason I want to see you. I've a nasty feeling that I'm being watched all the time, and didn't want to be seen passing this over." He handed over the letter, and Roger turned into Whitehall and pulled up.
"You see the nasty cunning of it, I trust," Talbot went on.
"I got the letter. So I, Sir Galahad the Second, go to rescue my Queen Regina. I get nabbed. The police are meant to reason. Aha! He has discovered where the Lovelies are and is going to make another kill.
Only I am not a killer, as you may guess."
Roger had read the message twice.
"When did you get this?"
"This morning at about 7:51.
"Do you recognize the writing?"
"No."
"I see," Roger said.
"Thanks, Talbot. I'm glad you didn't lose any time." This did not mean beyond doubt that Talbot was in the clear. Talbot could have written the letter and posted it to himself.
It had a West Central postmark. But he wouldn't have had he wanted to make a secret visit to the two girls. And would a guilty man make sure that the authorities knew that someone had the girl's address, and so put them on their guard? Talbot almost sneered. Don't miss the other obvious clue, will you? Killer Boy knows where the two queens are. Killer Boy might have another trick up his sleeve. Get Gina away from that place, West. The last sentence spat out. Understand? It's not safe for her there. We'll look after her. As you did, sweet Barbara Kelworthy? After a long pause, Roger said quietly, Talbot, take my tip and get some rest. You don't look as if you've had much lately. If you get any more messages, let me know at once. Telephone and tell me next time. If you prefer not to come to the yard, we'll meet outside again. The fatherly policeman, Talbot mocked. All right. I'll be good. Only one spot where I can get any peace these days. Ever heard of the halt leading the blind? If you want me, I'll be at Regina's place. Roger said, don't go making it worse for Mrs. Howe. We comfort each other, Talbot said. Odd, isn't it? He shivered. Where shall I drop you? Roger asked. Oh, anywhere. Roger chose a spot in Whitehall Place. The yard sergeant had kept up with them, and so had someone else who had done a remarkable job of shadowing. Turnbull also followed Talbot. Roger drove back to the yard. Roger was back in his office after a snack lunch by 2:30. The first thing he got was a message from the yard sergeant. Talbot had slipped him. Did it matter? It was easy to give your man the slip, no matter how good he was. But Talbot may have done it accidentally. He probably meant to go to Regina's home. The sergeant was coming back and could check. There were 6 reports, but none from Turnbull, who had not even taken the trouble to telephone a report. He was behaving as if he was answerable to no one, and before long, Chatworth would explode. The telephone bell rang. It might be a routine call, it might be dynamite. That was the kind of tension Roger felt. Mr. West, said the girl operator, in a tone which told him it wasn't routine. I've had a call from Paddington. The station inspector just left a message. Would you go to the Howards' home at once? Mr. Derek Talbot's been attacked there, and they are afraid that he's dying. Chapter 22. To Live or to Die. As Roger pulled up just behind the ambulance outside Regina's house, they were carrying Talbot out. It was a poignant reminder of when the boys had been poisoned. A crowd had gathered and the police were being severe. Roger pushed his way through. Talbot's face was just visible, very pale with the bags under his eyes looking almost black. His head was a massed turban of white bandages, but the bright crimson of blood was showing through in places. The divisional police surgeon was there. Will he live? Roger asked tautly. 50-50. Are you going with him?
No, nothing more I can do. He'll be on the table within an hour. His big chance is that Phillipson is at the hospital today. If anyone can save him, Phillipson can.
So, it's the head.
Battered something dreadful, the doctor said.
As if someone just bashed for the sake of bashing. He was a hardened campaigner of 40 disillusioning years. There was little he hadn't seen in the way of brutal savagery.
but he was shaken.
Either someone went mad, or the assailant wanted to pretend he was crazy.
The ambulance doors closed and Talbot was driven off. Roger and the police surgeon went into the little house.
Where's Mrs. Howard?
3 or 4 doors along.
She ran out of the house, screaming. That's what raised the alarm.
Roger nodded. They went into Regina's bedroom, and there was no need to be told that this was where the attack had been made. A pale, coloured, tiled fireplace was smothered in blood, especially at one corner. So was the surround. The carpet was damp and red with blood, too.
The furniture had been pushed about in all directions. A glass vase was broken.
The bedclothes were rumpled, although the bedspread was over it. Someone had lain down there, as if to relax. There was a familiar smell that Roger didn't like. Turnbull's Turkish tobacco?
Obviously, been a fight, the police surgeon said.
Yes. Roger's eyes were roving. He felt as badly as he had ever felt. Men were taking measurements and a photographer came in.
Find anything?
This, the police surgeon said. It was a half-smoked cigarette, which explained the familiar smell. The cork tip was still damp, and the gilt lettering on the stub was plain. Half Moon Turkish.
I'll take that, Roger said.
Thanks. He put it in an envelope.
Any ideas?
Do you mean guesses?
Your guesses are as good as most people's ideas, Roger said.
The police surgeon put his head on one side and grinned.
That's more like you. Haven't been yourself this morning.
A bit pale about the gills, too.
Harassing business, of course. But it won't do anyone any good if you knock yourself out.
Those guesses, urged Roger.
Oh, all right.
Someone just held Talbot's head in his hands and smashed it down on that corner.
The position of the body, the actual position and nature of the wounds, all point that way.
It wasn't an attack from behind. He was lying on his back.
What's more, there were bruises on his cheeks about...
There. The police surgeon pointed to his own cheekbones, and Roger had a vivid mind picture of someone holding Talbot's head in his hands. The thumb marks will be just about where the bruises were on Talbot's face.
Let's say he fell and knocked himself out on that corner, the police surgeon went on, or else was dazed. The assailant just bent over him, grabbed his head, and, well, that was that.
Bleeding was copious from nose and head. Didn't take long. Must have been hell.
Anything else?
Roger's voice was brittle.
No. I can't be sure how long he was lying there, but it wasn't very long. Blood was just beginning to get a surface film on it.
The window was open, and there's quite a draught.
The neighbours are out. No one seems to have heard anything.
Roger's gaze wouldn't settle, but kept roving. He came back to the pale tiles and the blood. And then he stiffened and moved forward, obviously not thinking of what the police surgeon was saying. He knelt down in front of the fireplace. There were bloodstains, but they weren't so haphazard as most of the others. There was a kind of form to them.
Doc, come here.
The police surgeon was just behind him, breathing down his neck. A local policeman was standing staring.
What do you make of that?
Writing, exclaimed the police surgeon.
His right hand was covered in blood, too.
What does it say? He pressed forward. The writing was 2 inches high, the letters were badly formed. But once one saw what they were, quite readable. The killer is... The last word, the name, had been rubbed out. The killer had been named, and had come and wiped across the name to smear it, so that no one could ever hope to read what it was. Roger said slowly, I didn't know Talbot had any idea. He went to the telephone by Regina's bed. This been tested for prints? The local man said, yes, sir. Thanks. Roger dialed the yard, asked for Chatworth, was quickly put through.
I haven't much time, sir, but I wonder if you'll talk to Paddington Hospital and find out if Mr. Phillipson, the surgeon operating on Derek Talbot...
On whom?
Yes,
Derek Talbot, Roger repeated. Find out if he needs any help. Talbot might live, but might die. And he seems to know the killer. Even if we could bring him round for a few seconds. Just time enough to name the swine, it would do.
Yes,
Chatworth said. There were times when he was the most understanding man in the world.
All right. Report again when you can.
Thank you, sir, Roger said stonily. He rang off and went to look at the writing in blood and muttered almost to himself, There's blood on Talbot's sleeve. He could have rubbed it off himself after collapsing again.
You know, West, said the police surgeon, if you were a patient of mine, I'd say that you ought to go off duty and take at least a week's rest at once. What the hell's the matter with you?
Sorry, Roger said.
I wasn't listening.
Save Talbot, if it's humanly possible, won't you? He forced a smile. Of course you will. He turned away and hurried out of the house. The police surgeon and the local policeman stared after him. He sat at the wheel of his car for a few seconds, smoking, and with the half-smoked Turkish cigarette in his hand. He was conscious of people staring at him. 2 reporters came near and went off. Then a woman came out of a house a little way along. He'd seen her before and recognized her as Mrs. Jameson, the neighbor who was such a good friend of Mrs. Hyatt. She came up to the car.
It is Chief Inspector West, isn't it?
Yes. He forced a smile.
I thought it was. Inspector, can you assure me that Regina is all right? I can't let Mrs. Howard go back to the house, but she's almost hysterical for fear that Regina might have been hurt. She saw the man.
She needn't worry, Roger said. This jolted him out of contemplation of the Turkish cigarette. Regina's quite safe.
Would you come and have a word with Mrs. Howard?
What else was there to do? He went into the neighbor's house. Mrs. Howard was walking round and round a small front room, her eyes feverishly bright, her lips looking bluish in a sharp reminder of the heart affliction. The one side of her face was like marble, the other twitching. She stopped abruptly when she saw him, and he was surprised that she recognized him so quickly.
Mrs. Howard,
I can give you my word that Regina is perfectly well, Roger said. I have actually talked to her this morning. There's been a burglary at your house, and my men are in possession, but it's nothing to do with Regina. And as far as I can find, nothing has been stolen. Unless you had a lot of money there.
Money? Echoed Mrs. Howard. It doesn't matter about money, I...
She stopped abruptly, waved her arms and almost fell. Her eyes closed. The neighbor held her. Hastily, Roger grabbed her too. Mrs. Howard's right hand fumbled at a small cloth bag tied to her waist. The neighbor snatched her hand away, opened the bag and took out a small bottle. opened the bottle and shook a small brown tablet out onto her palm, then forced this into Mrs. Howard's mouth. They stood back. "I'll send for her doctor," the neighbour said worriedly. "But I think she'll be all right. Those pills work miracles with her. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming."
"I'm glad you caught me," Roger said mechanically.
He went back to the car, got in, and drove off as two newspapermen bore down on him. He had no time for the press, little time for anyone. The half-smoked Turkish cigarette was still in his pocket, as if it were burning him. He remembered the way Turnbull's eyes clouded, as with rage and fury. He remembered how Turnbull hated Derek Talbot. He remembered how, only a few days ago, Turnbull had flung himself at Mark Osborne and battered the man savagely. There wasn't much doubt that Regina had the same effect on Turnbull as she had on Talbot and on Osborne. Facts were facts, no matter how ugly. Turnbull had followed Talbot, and Turnbull had been in the room. Roger knew that he ought to report at once to the yard and have a call put out for Turnbull. Get him in. Question him. There would be blood on the clothes and the hands of the attacker. Turnbull had a bachelor's flat in Kensington. Roger turned his car toward Kensington, his heart beat with a painful heaviness. Talbot lay between life and death. At least one person knew where to find Regina and Norma. Dickerson was still at liberty. And Turnbull... He reached an old-fashioned building which had been converted into flats and found Turnbull's name printed in black on a brown polished board. Detective Inspector Warren Turnbull, DSO, MC. It was like putting one's decorations on a private letter heading. Roger knew that Turnbull had won the awards, and it didn't surprise him. The man's physical courage couldn't be surpassed. But courage was largely a matter of sensitivity. He walked up the stairs towards the first floor and the flat. Turnbull's name was on a small brass plate, complete with the DSO and the MC. He rang the bell. Now that he was here, he knew that he should never have come. He should have told Chatworth and left Chatworth to handle the situation. He hadn't done so because of the time when Turnbull had hung down from a narrow plank and held on to him, saving his life. A gunman had lurked there too, and Turnbull hadn't given that a moment's thought. Unless he had known that he was safe. Roger rang the bell again. There were movements, footsteps, a closing door. And then Turnbull opened his door. Chapter 23. Evidence. Turnbull wore a dressing gown. Silk, shiny, a dazzling design of golds and blues. He looked enormous in it. His eyes were narrowed, but nothing could hide their tiredness. He was astounded at the sight of Roger and stood with his hands raised almost as high as his chest, mouth open a little. Roger said, "Hello. I want to talk." He stepped forward. For a moment he thought that Turnbull would stop him, but Turnbull let him pass, then slammed the door. That sounded very loud. It was like the slamming of a door in a deadly trap. There was a hall and a bright front room overlooking some gardens. The sun was breaking through misty clouds. Roger couldn't have cared less about the room, yet could not fail to see that it was the room a rich man might possess. A big screen, expensive television set was in one corner, and books lined the fireplace walls from floor to ceiling. Expensive-looking books. There was a baby grand piano, and on it a photograph of Regina Howard. Turnbull said, "Look at me, not her. What do you want?" "Have you given up working?" Roger asked brusquely.
Hell no, but wouldn't you like me to? I came home to change.
You mean you came home to wash the blood off your hands, Roger said very softly.
Turnbull didn't speak, but his eyes seemed to grow huge and to flame.
And your clothes?
Roger made himself speak in a low voice and stood absolutely rigid.
You murderous brute.
Turnbull's hands were still raised and clenched. Roger was big. Turnbull was bigger. And he began to breathe hissingly through his nostrils the way he always did when he was fighting to keep his temper.
Why attack Talbot? Roger asked.
He knew that there was no time for asking questions. But questions had to come out. He had to make Turnbull talk.
Why go there and do it?
God, I don't understand what's got into you.
Talbot's the killer, Turnbull said. And you were pretty close with him this morning.
Nice and snug.
I saw you conspiring with a killer.
Don't be a bloody fool.
So I'm a fool. That's right. A conceited lout, remember?
The words must have burned themselves into Turnbull's mind.
But I wasn't doing any deal with Talbot. How much did he pay you?
Roger said, listen, Turnbull, you're a bigger fool than I thought.
So I'm a fool, Turnbull repeated.
His whole body began to tremble.
Get out, West. Get out of my flat before I break your neck.
He caught his breath and then bellowed,
get out, I tell you!
I'm on my way, Roger said.
But why kill Talbot? The way you lie, sneered Turnbull. Can't you dream up a motive like you dream up everything else?
So he was going to use flat denial. Perhaps he was so full of conceit that he believed he could get away with it.
I'll dream plenty up, Roger rasped. You're in love with Regina. You know that she's the killer.
So did Talbot.
And he was going to talk, so Turnbull leapt at him.
Roger was ready. He saw the great body move and he felt the wind of the sweeping blow, but swerved to avoid it. Everything he possessed was in the punch he smashed at Turnbull's chin. The timing was perfect, and Turnbull was moving into it. He just rocked back on his heels, then fell flat. He didn't get up.
Roger turned slowly away from him because a new sound intruded. He couldn't be sure that he knew everything. It was just possible, that was all. The ugly thing was that it made Regina guilty. Her beauty, her naturalness, her charm, all seemed to scream a denial. Damn that sound of a ringing bell. A telephone, of course. It was by the window. He had to step past Turnbull, whose eyes were open but glazed.
This is Detective Inspector Turnbull's flat.
Turnbull?
The voice, incredibly, was gruff and familiar. There couldn't be two voices like it, could there?
Chatworth's.
Turnbull? Chatworth repeated.
Is that you?
Roger said, West speaking, sir.
Roger!
That was like an explosion followed by a hissing pause. Then,
listen. Hold, Turnbull, but be careful with him. He was seen leaving the Hyde's house half an hour before Talbot was found there. Be careful, mind you, he's an ugly customer when roused. Don't let him get away.
He's stretched out unconscious, Roger said.
He won't give any more trouble.
Send someone, sir. He rang off before Chatworth could comment. It brought a curious feeling of relief. He had given Turnbull a chance to explain, and the man hadn't taken it.
Someone else had put the call out for him. Others had seen him at the Howards' house. There was no need for him, Roger West, to lay the charge or start the hunt.
Keeping an eye on Turnbull, who was beginning to stir, Roger looked into the bedroom. It was luxurious, and had a large double bed. By the side of the bed was another picture of Regina, looking at her loveliest. On a chair,
was a crumpled brown suit. There were bloodstains on the coat and the trousers. Chatworth was bulkier and burlier than ever as he squatted on the corner of Roger's desk. Eddie Day and two other chief inspectors were in the room and so silent that it was hard to believe they were present. Chatworth might suddenly sweep out of the room and take Roger with him, and deny them the privilege of this. It was nearly 10 o'clock that night.
"And I don't give a hoot what you think. You were wrong both ways. You should have taken someone else with you, knowing he was dangerous, if only to protect yourself. And believing what you did, you should have reported to me before you went to see Turnbull. You must be nearly as crazy as he is. And it's no use telling me that he once saved your life. This is a criminal investigation department, not a bureau for sentimental snops."
Roger took all this poker-faced. Chatworth almost bit through a cheroot.
"All right. All right," he growled. "I know what you did it for. But if you ever take a chance like that again, Well, don't. Now, what's the position? Talbot's still unconscious. They may save his life, but he won't be able to talk for days. There's this theory that Regina Howard is the killer, perhaps working with Dickerson. That right?"
Roger said, "I don't rate it as high as a theory. I can only tell you what possibilities there are. It could explain why Turnbull attacked Talbot. There's no doubt that Turnbull is passionately in love with Regina Howard. And yet..."
"Well, don't hold out on us."
"It doesn't square up," Roger said abruptly. "At first I accepted it, but it can't be right. Turnbull hasn't made a statement, has he?"
"No. He sits in his cell like a betrayed bull. He didn't condescend to reply to the charge, which I made myself."
Roger said, "Would he take Talbot's head between his hands and kill and splash blood all over the place? Could a man with his training and his flashes of brilliance make an elementary mistake like that? He'd know he would be caught. He might lose his temper and attack Talbot. But he wouldn't just batter him like that. That would make him a demon. It would mean he is witless, too, and he isn't. Above everything else, he's a detective. That's his dominating pride." Roger jumped up and pushed his chair back, then began to pace the room. "I can't believe that he'd let anything stop him from making an arrest. If he was sure Regina Hyde was guilty, he'd charge her, no matter what he felt toward her. I can see him smashing at Talbot, yes. I just can't go any further." Chatworth still perched on the desk.
"I see what you mean," he said. "Complete reversal of a personality. Too strong will to act out of character like that. But damn it, blood-stained clothes, dried blood found in his fingernails, a blood-stain smearing his right forearm."
"I know," Roger said. "I still boggle at it. And I'd like to know if anyone who could have been Dickerson was near the Howard's house today. Because if Turnbull knocked Talbot out and then left him, someone else could have come along and finished him off. The one thing we can take for granted is that Turnbull isn't the killer. Yet Talbot thought he could name the killer. We didn't worry about the Howard's house once Regina was away. That was the mistake." He was still pacing the room, keeping his voice low, and trying to pierce the mist which had enshrouded the case from the beginning. "We know Turnbull was there. But someone else might..." He broke off. Chatworth, knowing him, kept absolutely silent. So did the others. Roger said softly, "There was one witness we haven't worried much, because we're scared of what might happen to her if she were high-pressured. Mrs. Howard. She ran screaming from the house, remember? That's how it was all discovered.
Then she collapsed and I couldn't question her. We haven't tackled her beyond formal questioning. I think we'll try again, sir. He was already looking more alert. His eyes were less shadowy, his face less drawn. And they knew he hadn't said everything he had in mind. There's that old family friendship between her and Dickerson, too. She might be keeping quiet for old time's sake.
She'll pay for questioning. I think I'll go over at once. But we'll need to check with her doctor that she can stand it. If necessary, I think we ought to insist and give the doctor, a woman, an opportunity to be present, if she wants to be.
Chatworth was almost humble.
All right, Roger, I'll see to that.
Thanks, said Roger. He picked his hat off the stand. I'll wait until I've word from you, sir. He went out and downstairs. A youthful sergeant was waiting by the side of his car, warned to stand by. Roger spoke to him absently, then took the wheel. The night was cool, but the stars were out. There was little traffic, and he took the main roads, turned out of Oxford Street toward the Edgware Road, and was soon pulling up outside Regina's house. He walked to it. The police, now on duty, saluted. He was there for 10 minutes before Chatworth telephoned to say that the woman doctor would soon be at the neighbour's house. Roger waited outside for her. She was elderly, wary, but cooperative, and she knew the neighbour well.
How is Mrs. Howard, Mrs. Jameson?
Well, she's asleep, the neighbour said. I hate the thought of disturbing her. But if you say it's all right, Doctor...
We'll be gentle, promised the doctor. Let me see. This is the room, isn't it?
She opened a door. She stepped inside, then stopped abruptly, causing Roger to bump into her. The exclamation at her lips and the sudden halt brought fear pounding into Roger's mind. He pushed past the doctor. The room was empty. A window leading into the street was open. Roger went into the street, told the police there to put out a general call for Mrs. Howard, then returned to the house.